you've been watching NFL games this fall, you've no doubt noticed the amount of attention being paid to hits on defenseless players, helmet-to-helmet tackles, and dangerous blows to the head. It seems like a growing number of fines and suspensions are being dished out. This is all part of our growing knowledge regarding the dangers of subconcussive impacts and concussions. Thanks to the work of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, awareness is growing regarding our need to reduce blows to the head, particularly at the level of youth sports. In fact, the Concussion Legacy Foundation recently released a PSA challenging parents to put off tackle football until the age of 14. Since we need to steward the health of our children and teens, we must learn what we can about concussions and the degenerative brain disease known as CTE. We'll talk about the work of the Concussion Legacy Foundation with Chief Impact Officer Tyler Mayland and get a view from the sidelines with athletic trainer Sheila Mueller on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here at CPYU. Today, in the absence of Jason, Chris Wagner, who sits across from me all the time, is going to sit in Jason's seat, I guess, and co-host, right? You're ready to go with this?
Sure thing.
Yeah.
Well, co-host it is for the day.
We are going to tackle a topic today, and by the way, no pun intended there, but there's a topic we want to tackle that we've been addressing for quite some time here at CPYU. And that is kids and concussions. There's been a lot of talk about this over recent years. I've done some reading on this and have been a little fascinated and quite frightened at times by what's being, you know, learned. And a lot of the research that's being done on the human brain now, not just in terms of the development of the human brain, the plasticity of the human brain, the way the human brain works, but also traumatic brain injuries and concussions in sports. There's been a lot of talk about that. Chris, we've done quite a bit. I probably once every 6 weeks, we put up in our little one-minute podcast, Youth Culture Today, the radio show, we address this.
We're constantly having to address this because it comes up in the news all the time. So over the last several years, I'd say at least once every 6 weeks. That's the kind of batch of radio shows we do. We're addressing it at least once every time.
Yeah. So I'm old enough to have been in college in the 1970s, and I know I've told you this story, Chris, and I remember this like it was yesterday because it left quite an impression on me. I was actually in the library at Geneva College studying one night and took a break. I was in the periodical room, and I just went to some of the medical journals that were on the – I just had this weird fascination with that stuff, and I pulled one down. It was the Journal of Psychological Medicine. Just happened to leaf through this, and I stumbled on this article. It was from 1973, back in 76 was when I saw this. It was called The Aftermath of Boxing, and what really struck me about this was the photographs of the brains of normal people, like cutaways of the brains of normal people who were not involved in boxing, and then boxers, just a very small sampling of boxers, who had taken continual blows to the head. In fact, I just read, I should have pulled this up. Just today, I believe in USA Today, there's a story that popped up about a boxer who was maybe 27 years old who died yesterday after taking a blow to the head, I believe in a boxing match on Sunday. I may have that wrong, but I know I spotted the article this morning. I should have printed that out. But as I read this, I was really struck by the fact that they were discovering this. And at the time, it was someone, they referred to a guy named, last name Martland, who introduced the term punch drunk into the medical literature back in 1928. He used it to describe, the article says, a tendency for experienced boxers to become unsteady on their feet and to move and think more slowly. And then by 1969, there was some more research that was being done showing that there was chronic brain damage occurring in boxers as a result of their careers. So the study that I read was looking at the neuropathological results in neuropathological studies of 15 ex-boxers. All that to say, This was being noticed a long time ago, and I actually remembered that. So when we started to talk about concussions here, I found someone to help me find that actual article, and so I have a printout of it. I've read it since. But what's been great in terms of pushing back on this is the work that's being done now by a group that's been around for a little while. We're going to hear more about, called the Concussion Legacy Foundation. So I've asked two people to come on and join us. One is actually first time we've had a family member on here. It's my daughter-in-law, Sheila, married my son, Josh. Sheila, how are you?
Good.
And she's probably a little nervous, but Sheila is the head athletic trainer at a large high school here in central Pennsylvania. Sheila, how long have you been there? Has it been about 10 years or?
This is my 11th year.
11th year. So, and she's working with all the athletes, a lot of football players. They have a lacrosse team there, lacrosse players. Of course, we'll get into talking about, you know, blows to the head with soccer balls and things like that. But you have over the years, Sheila, had to deal with concussions and then the concussion protocols that you've instituted there. I guess the state has instituted just something about that real quick.
So there was a bill that was actually passed in 2011, I believe. It's called Act 101, and they passed a bill not necessarily with concussion protocols per se, but tying in coaches, because a lot of their schools that still don't have athletic trainers, so they're putting more of a liability on coaches being aware of it being a serious issue. And if you notice these symptoms, that the kid actually needs to be cleared by a medical professional. So that's one of the things that definitely came about when I was at Cumberland Valley, because all of our coaching staff had to take an online quiz. They still do every year. Even our volunteer coaches, they have to take a concussion test, basically educating them what a concussion is, symptoms to be aware of. So, because a lot of times we're not at every single athletic event. Now, football, we are. But sometimes my back is turned helping with another injury. So coaches are aware of what to look for, and they will notify me of it.
Yeah, which is interesting. Yeah, when you say that, one of the things, I think it was in the film Head Games, which the Concussion Legacy Foundation has been a part of, some of the talk about missing some of the concussions because, you know, trainers, medical staff on the sidelines at NFL games have their backs turned, and they're working with other players who have, you know,
yeah, that's why they, I believe they said that was when they started putting people up in the booth to basically watch out and look out for those types of things in case the trainers were, you know, did have their backs to the field.
Yeah. Joining us from, I believe, Boston today is Tyler Malin. Tyler is the chief impact officer for the Concussion Legacy Foundation, which we're going to hear about here in a minute. Tyler leads their strategy and execution on all their programs and communications for the Concussion Legacy Foundation. He has been with them since March of 2015, and before that he worked for 3 years in the front office of the New York Mets. He also worked in media relations with the Arkansas Razorback Athletic Department. He's worked with the Cape Cod Baseball League, and he is a native of Vermont. Beautiful right now, I'm sure. Graduated from Vassar College with a bachelor's degree in English, and he is an avid sports fan. I don't know if we're supposed to ask him if he's a Patriots fan or not. Do you want to do that, Chris? Should we go down that road? Or
I'd probably rather not.
All right, all right. Tyler, are you a Patriots fan?
I defer.
Okay, all right, okay, yeah. Well, I'm an Eagles fan, so we will, I guess, meet each other again here soon. So, Tyler, thanks so much for coming on. Can you tell us a bit about the Concussion Legacy Foundation?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, guys. So the Concussion Legacy Foundation, we're in our 12th year now here as a national nonprofit based in Boston. And our mission is to support athletes, military veterans, and everyone affected by concussions and also chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. So we're trying to achieve safer sports, and, you know, safer athletes through education and policy work and innovation, and also ultimately to just end the disease CTE through prevention and research. So we're partnered here in Boston with the VA BU CLF Brain Bank, and really trying to push forward the research on CTE and brain injuries so that we can, you know, create safer and smarter sports, especially for youth athletes.
And the work really was spearheaded in the beginning by someone who had played football at Harvard, then entered the world of professional wrestling, Christopher Nowinski. Talk a little bit about his story and how he got teamed up with others, I think physicians who were starting to investigate this and treat this, and how, you know, the Concussion Legacy Foundation grew out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chris was an all-Ivy defensive tackle at Harvard University. And then, like many, you know, Harvard graduates, he went on to wrestle in the WWE. So he became a professional wrestler, appeared on Raw, and actually had his career ended by too many kicks to the head. He had concussions and post-concussion syndrome from his career. And so he had to step away and had some pretty severe symptoms, some post-concussion syndrome symptoms that, you know, really affected his life. So he kind of went on a journey after that to figure out why this was happening to him. And he discovered a lot about the way, you know, that we in the nation, in the sports world, react to concussions and maybe mishandle a lot of the concussions that happen. He wasn't aware of how he was supposed to rest and, you know, take care of his brain after suffering concussions, whether it was playing football or wrestling. And so he said, well, you know, if I'm not aware, how many other people aren't aware? So this really started a journey for Chris. He wrote the book Head Games, about football's concussion crisis. And finally he ran into Dr. Robert Cantu, who was the first doctor who could really help him with his symptoms. And so Dr. Cantu's, you know, a world-renowned neurosurgeon and one of the great concussion experts in the world. And Dr. Cantu helped Chris realize how many concussions he had had, how many times he was playing or fighting through brain injuries when he shouldn't have been. And that really turned things around for Chris. And so they actually paired up to co-found the Concussion Legacy Foundation together. And it really started with getting brains to research both concussions and the emerging long-term disease of CTE, which, you know, we really didn't know much about those, you know, 11, 12 years ago when things were first starting. But now we've built a brain bank of over 800 brains. It's become an enormous, obviously, issue in the sports world. And so it really started way back then when Chris and Dr. Cantu teamed up to found the organization and then partnered in Boston with Boston University, the VA, Dr. Ann McKee, to really form, you know, our biggest research center to study this.
Now, explain a little bit about what CTE is. I know that we're familiar with it here because we've talked about it. We've read about it. I've read the book Head Games. And by the way, for all our listeners, we'll include links to every resource that's mentioned here, including the book Head Games and also a film you can watch based on the story of, you know, a documentary based on Chris Nowinski's story, Dr. Cantu and others. It's a fascinating film and very informative. That's called Head Games as well. And the film does talk about CTE, but can you talk a bit about CTE and explain exactly what you all have learned about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So CTE is a degenerative brain disease that's found in athletes, military veterans, and others with a history of repetitive brain trauma. So it forms when a protein called tau kind of forms clumps that slowly spread throughout the brain, killing brain cells. And that's why, you know, that's why it's a degenerative disease. It is not a concussion. Those two are very different things. And what we're continuing to find about CTE is that it's correlated with those repetitive hits to the head. So, you know, how many years did you receive hits to the head? How many hits did you take? And not, you know, did you have one really large concussion or one big, you know, car accident where you had a brain injury? We're really finding that CTE is caused by repetitive hits to the head.
Now, is that those repetitive hits to the head, is that what is referred to as subconcussive impacts?
Yeah, absolutely. So a concussion is a brain injury that basically causes symptoms, right? You find that, you know, balance instability or short-term memory loss or a headache or, you know, sensitivity to light or noise, all of those things we know as concussion symptoms. That's what allows us to know someone received a concussion. Subconcussive hits to the head are those that don't reach that threshold. So they don't cause symptoms. So the brain is shaken. There's an injury there, but it's not so violent that the damage to the brain cells is causing symptoms to appear. And so, you know, in plain English, what are subconcussive hits? It's, you know, it's every play when those linemen are smacking against each other on the line of a football field. Or it's, you know, when you take that header off of a goal kick on a soccer field and you're not concussed, but you're taking a hit to the head. Or it's when you're checked into the boards in hockey and you get that hit against the boards. Those are all examples of subconcussive hits, which we are learning add up and are very important to be aware of, even if they don't cause those acute symptoms in the moment. Hmm.
So just a few days ago, you folks released a PSA. It's about 30 seconds long. We'll include a link to that. That I think in many ways has gone viral. A lot of people are not just watching it, but they're talking about it. And I think as I looked at it yesterday on YouTube, it's actually getting more thumbs down than it is thumbs up. We talked about that a little bit, and which I expected. That's why I looked for that, because you're addressing an issue that really steps on a lot of toes, because youth sports are so huge in our culture right now. We don't want to see our kids taken off the field. We want to see them continue to play. And I know in talking with Sheila a lot of times, you know, a lot of the pressure comes from parents and coaches. When I talk to athletic trainers anywhere, parents and coaches are pushing to get their kids back maybe too soon. So I know mm-hmm. that there's going to be pushback on that PSA. But talk a little bit about the PSA, what you were trying to accomplish with that, and a little bit internally perhaps of what the feedback has been that you folks have been hearing in this first week.
Sure. So the PSA starts with kind of a look at a football field, and you've got kids running around playing tackle football, and then it changes very quickly. And you see, you know, kids smoking in the huddle and on the sideline. They're having cigarettes passed out by their coach. You know, a child is getting a cigarette lit up by his mom. So it's obviously intentionally very jarring. It's called Tackle Can Wait. And what we're doing is actually putting out this message in response to a major study that came out of the CTE Center just last week, was published in the Annals of Neurology, that was showing some pretty shocking data. And so we've known for a while that playing football can cause CTE, right? I talked about DE, the one known cause, you know, that even the Centers for Disease Control put in their fact sheet on CTE is repetitive hits to the head. That's the one known risk factor for this disease. But we've never known the strength of relationship between playing football and the disease CTE. So this paper that came out in the Annals of Neurology for the very first time quantified the strength of that relationship. So this study showed that although we don't know, you know, your risk for CTE after 1 year of football, every subsequent year you play tackle football, your risk goes up 30% to get the disease CTE. And so that means it doubles every 3 years. And it means that a child who started football at the age of 5 instead of the age of 14 would have 10 times the risk of getting this degenerative brain disease. And so they're pretty shocking numbers. And one of the most amazing things is that that correlation, that strength of the relationship between years of play and risk of CTE, is actually stronger than the strength of the relationship between years of smoking and risk of lung cancer. And so that's what this very jarring PSA is all about, is, you know, we're all very much on the same page that kids should not be smoking, and that's because they can't understand the long-term risks of that action and because it's very dangerous. But now we know that just playing tackle football adds up your risk in a stronger way than smoking and lung cancer. And so it's pretty shocking data, but it's, you know, it's peer review published, and it's really going to change the scope of sports because we've never known about that relationship until now.
Yeah, and that's important stuff. We need to know about that. Listen, we're going to take a break here for just a few seconds, and we'll come back and continue this conversation about kids, concussions, and the work of the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Stick with us. Someone once told me that readers are leaders and leaders are readers. I'm convinced that one of the most important disciplines for youth workers and parents is reading. I've also found that reading and discussing books together has helped me not only stay on a reading schedule, but to consider things that I might not have noticed on my own. That said, I want to invite you to join a reading community where together we read noteworthy and provocative books on important matters related to faith and culture. Our CPYU reading and discussion group can be found on Facebook. Almost 500 people are a part of the group, and we'd love to have you join us. We read and discuss one book every 2 months. Just search on Facebook for the CPYU Reading Discussion Group and then request to join. I'd love to have you join us. Welcome back, everybody, to Youth Culture Matters. And I want to go to Sheila real quick. From an athletic trainer's perspective, I know you've had to develop protocols. I know that since you're my daughter-in-law, our family vacation, the opportunities in the summer have been, they've diminished, Sheila, because you folks are actually, it's really interesting with football, you're starting earlier because you have concussion, like protocol testing or baseline testing, I think you call it. Is that what that is before practice?
We start early because of heat acclimation, but there's no contact during that week.
Okay. But you do you do baseline testing? Is that for, you know,
We do have baseline testing. However, there's been a shift. So this year we're actually in the works of changing our concussion protocol, just trying to make it better just because there's more research with the baseline testing. We've been doing it for 10 years. We're not going to fully probably take that away. Well, the baseline testing we'll probably take away, but we're still going to do post injury testing. We're still in the works with like meeting with certain physicians and discussing that. But, you know, I was looking, I've been recording data on concussions the past 3 years. And I don't know if like, I was just writing this down last night. The past 9 weeks, this is just the past 9 weeks this fall, when football and all the other sports started, because football really didn't start contact till the second week of August. So the past 9 weeks, there's been 29 reported concussions. 19 of those were males, 10 females. 14 out of the 19 males were football players. Hmm. 6 of them were in games, 9 were in practices. I don't know if like, I was just like, you know, just jotting this stuff down because I've been like keeping track of data because I had to report it to a newspaper 3 or 4 years ago. So I've just been keeping track just for my own, I don't know. It's just interesting. I feel like that each year I feel like there's a little bit better education every year. Some parents are jumping on board. They're more aware of it. They're concerned. A lot of questions I get from parents are, do you think he should continue to play? This is his second or third one.
Let me ask you about that. Yeah. Are you finding over the years, because you've been there 11 years, are you finding that there's less pushback from parents as the awareness grows of what this is all about, less pushback to get my child, son or daughter, back on the field, and maybe you're seeing a decrease in that pressure, but maybe more of an increase in care and concern for kids?
I definitely see a more care and concern. There still is this element in there of like questioning if they're telling the truth.
You're talking about the students themselves, the players.
Like if the player is actually being honest, like they're almost lying about having symptoms just because they don't want to play.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But it's I would say the concern is higher. There's still things that surprise me. So recently, yesterday, I was connected with a parent who was concerned about their daughter with a concussion. She's in seventh grade, softball player. They don't have an athletic trainer at the middle school level at this certain particular school. So I was connected through one of our coaches to just try to give this mother advice. So what I found interesting in our conversation, the parents still dropped you know, this tournament coming up and all of these college recruits are going to be there. And I just looked at the mom and I said, she's in seventh grade.
Yeah.
I just, sometimes I'm still surprised by that. and maybe it's just my perspective on things. Like, I don't, even though I love athletics and I love sports and love what I do, I don't find my, like, as an if I was an athlete myself, I wouldn't find my identity and purpose in the sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, I like what you were saying, Walt, like, the parents are living through their kids and pushing their kids. And so I still get surprised by that at times. It's not often, I will say. Like, yeah. You know, I don't get pushback from parents. I more so get jokes. Like, I'll get a joke saying, like, well, I got dinged in the head when I was... It's certain comments, but I don't laugh. I try not to make it a joke, and I stand my ground about how serious it is with their child, and this is not really a laughing matter. It's their brain we're talking about.
Yeah. Let me go to Tyler on that. Chris, you wanted to ask a question.
Well, I think that's Sheila brought up a good point. This, just because we're pointing out research and the Concussion Legacy Foundation is pointing out research that is just informing us of the dangers of this, that doesn't mean any of us are anti-football, anti-sport, we're looking out for the health and well-being of kids. And I think, with your PSA, Tyler, as you get pushback with that, I think I'll let you expound on the idea that you guys aren't saying no football. This is, tackle can wait. So you can expound on that idea. But I also want to ask, too, with your PSA, you announced that no tackle until the age of 14. So how did you guys decide? Was it based on research or some other factor? What made you just settle on the age? Okay, 14 is an okay age for them to start playing tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. So to address your first question, yes, this is very much a campaign about delaying the age at which, we have our children start playing tackle football. So tackle can wait. It's not anti-football, and we're very much in favor of kids playing flag football or other sports when they're younger, as long as those sports don't involve repetitive hits to the head. So, like you were just talking about, Sheila, sports are supposed to be fun, especially for kids. They're supposed to go out and run around and have fun and get exercise. And so really the core message here is that we don't need to be exposing those 8, 9, 10-year-olds to risk of a long-term brain disease just in the name of having fun. And there are alternatives to that, like flag football, where you can still learn the game and be athletic and get exercise and not be, exposing yourself to risk. In terms of the age of 14, there is no absolutely perfect age. It's actually, it's kind of similar to smoking. The age has been 18 for a while, where we're allowing, people to buy cigarettes. In some states it's 21 right now. There's no perfect age, but we settled on the age of 14 for a variety of reasons. First of all, the brain is going through pretty amazing developments and growth between those ages of 10 and 13. There's a ton of kind of progress being made as that, if you think about the difference between a 9 or 10-year-old and a 14-year-old, there's just major, major maturity and progress happening in their brain in that very important window of time. And then there are also really important structural things. I mean, Sheila, you were talking earlier about how you now have the ability on the sideline of your high school sports to look back at a play and, see the mechanism of injury to see if there might have been a concussion. I don't see that on a lot of 6, 7, 8-year-old sidelines for youth tackle football. And so there's also a really important component where, as you get into the high school age, you've got athletic trainers, you've got medical personnel, you've got much more strict guidelines in terms of concussion protocols for these high schoolers as opposed to the young children. So it's really a combination of those scientific reasons about that great brain development that's happening in those important years as kids approach adolescence. And then also the structural reasons in terms of what do we have to offer as support mechanisms in terms of athletic trainers and medical support. As kids get into more formal leagues in high school, they have much more strict guidelines. I will just add also, So this was a really important study that came out last week. There's also a study in 2017 out of Boston University that showed children who started tackle football before age 12 had significantly worse outcomes later in life as opposed to those who started tackle football after age 12. So when you're talking about, you know, cognitive abilities and risk of depression and behavioral issues, all of those things were more likely for those who started tackle football at a younger age as opposed to after age 12. Mm.
You know, as the research begins to unfold here even more, it just makes sense to me that, you know, parents are diligent, coaches are diligent. I certainly think we need to train athletes to be diligent and being honest about this and realizing that prevention is really important because, and, you know, Tyler, you can speak to this with your work up there that you folks are doing. With CTE, I know you're identifying what the symptoms are, and you're suspicious of this in people, but you really don't know till after you have an opportunity after death to look at the brain. It's not diagnosable prior to death, is my understanding. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So right now, we can only diagnose CTE definitively after death by analyzing the brain tissue. We are, you know, through the work of the Brain Bank, we're putting together an increasingly specific sort of list of clinical criteria in terms of, okay, what does CTE look like in life? But there's no way to definitively diagnose it. So you'll see more and more folks being diagnosed with probable CTE or hearing from their doctor, you may have signs of CTE based on, you know, your risk profile. If you were exposed to years of head impacts for 10 or 12 or 15 years, and you have these symptoms, you know, you're at a high risk or you may have this. But yes, exactly. We can only diagnose it definitively after death. And that's why this research is so important, because, you know, the more research we can do, the closer we can get to actually diagnosing it in living people. Mm.
On your website, concussionfoundation.org, again, we'll include a link to that. And we really highly recommend that folks go there, whether you're a parent, a coach, or just someone who's concerned about kids. There are some statistics on there on your homepage that talk about the problem. 3.8 million, it's estimated, the CDC says, estimated 3.8 million concussions occur each year. Only 1 in 6 concussions are diagnosed. And then this was interesting because I want to go to the Brain Bank and some of the work you've done with the NFL players. 110 of 111 former NFL players have been diagnosed with CTE through the work of the Brain Bank. I'm interested in that because, you know, one of the stories, and I think I read about this first in Chris Nowinski's book, and I know it's referenced in the film Head Games. You know, one of the guys that I watched as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, Andre Waters, who was just a terrorizing presence on the field as a tackler. I mean, he was a very physical player, took his own life, and Chris actually contacted his family in the midst of their grief. And I know that Chris does this quite a bit. You folks do this rather regularly now, where there's suspicions of this, and just said, hey, we're doing this research. Can we have his brain? You know, he was one of the first, I guess, and I noticed in reading the newspaper, you just recently released some information on Hockey Hall of Famer Stan Mikita, that his brain was examined. He had CTE, and I know that back at the end of July, former NFL player, Hall of Famer Nick Bonacani, he passed away, and he had donated his brain to the Brain Bank as well. So but talk a little bit about that. I mean, is that where you're really seeing it, is with the retired football players?
So football players take up the majority of those who are in the Brain Bank. But that doesn't necessarily mean that those are the only ones who get CTE, right? So at the Brain Bank, we've published the first cases on the military, on soccer, on younger football players, so college and high school football players. There was a baseball case. So we're really finding anyone exposed to years of repetitive brain trauma is at risk for this disease. However, we know that, you know, the NFL is by far the biggest in the country. It, you know, creates the biggest headlines. And And it also does have just repetitive head impacts as a major core part of the game. And so for that reason, the press on the NFL cases has been, you know, larger than anything else. And we have a lot of football players in our brain bank and also football players who have pledged. So one thing I'll note is particularly interesting about both Nick Buonocore and Stan Mikita is that both of them visited the brain bank in Boston during their lives and were very interested in pushing this research forward. So both of them actually pledged to donate their brains while they were still living so that they could be a part of the research and advance our knowledge on this disease. And so that's actually one of our major programs. Like you said, Chris used to call families who had lost a loved one, a very difficult conversation to have. But he found almost every single one of them was interested in, you know, pushing this research forward, even in a really tough time of their life. And now we don't make nearly as many of those calls because we have a brain pledge program where people are aware of the program. They can sign up at concussionfoundation.org/pledge and pledge their brain. It's almost, you know, it's kind of like an organ donor card. They'll receive a brain donor card in the mail, and that just makes them part of the research program. They can participate in clinical research while they're living if they'd like. And then they can become part of the research program after their death. And, you know, we're encouraging anyone to sign up, and, you know, 50 years down the road, you know, you can be part of the brain bank. But while you're living, you can make a big difference on clinical research and helping us, you know, find out more about brain injuries. So that's something we really encourage people to do to help push the research forward.
Hmm. And by the way, anybody who happened to watch, I believe it was on HBO, I watched it, the film, the documentary film on Nick Buonocore and his story. Just dealing with issues related to paralysis, obviously because of his son, and the football injury he had. I believe he was at was he at VMI or the Citadel, one of the military schools. I can't remember. But that, and then towards the latter part of the film, there's actually footage where they report on his visit to the Concussion Legacy Foundation and the donation of his brain to the brain bank. So that's a fascinating watch, and it's encouraging to hear that people are thinking ahead on this. So listen, we're going to take a break again. We'll be right back to finish up our conversation as we talk about kids and the brain and concussions and CTE. Here at CPYU, we want to help you help parents stay up to date on today's youth culture. One of our most popular resources is our monthly parent page. This four-page, full-color resource offers parents a timely, practical look into current youth culture trends, along with resources to help them parent their children and teens Christianly in today's rapidly changing youth culture. If you're a youth worker who would like to get this monthly resource into the hands of your parents, you can see a sample parent page and learn more by visiting cpyuparentpage.com. So to continue this conversation, Tyler, I want to jump in with you again real quick. And I know that you folks up there at the Concussion Legacy Foundation, you're not just providing research. One of the things I really appreciate is as I read about what you're doing, as I watch what you're doing, you know, even as we watch the film, there's just deep care and concern for people and a heavy emphasis on prevention. Obviously, that's the biggest thing with this. So what are some of the recommendations, you know, that you're making above and beyond, you know, waiting with football, tackle football till the age of 14, which we've already talked about? What are some of the recommendations you folks are making to coaches and to parents?
Yeah, I'll list a couple of things here. I mean, certainly with regard to youth sports, our number one recommendation for parents is to enroll their children in sports that don't have repetitive head impacts. So that's what Tackle Can Wait is all about. But also we want parents, you know, looking at whether their kids are heading in soccer. U.S. soccer did provide regulations where kids can't head under age 11 anymore. No checking in hockey for young children. And again, USA Hockey has a rule, no checking under age 13. So some sports are really coming around in that regard. One thing I do want to touch on in terms of a real action point is for parents, when they're reacting to concussions, responding to concussions in their children, or also post-concussion syndrome, which is when the symptoms last longer than, you know, the typical week or couple weeks in terms of recovery, to not confuse a concussion or post-concussion syndrome with CTE. That's a really important point. And then I'll let you guys know, for any of your listeners, we now just started over the summer a helpline, the CLF helpline. It's at concussionfoundation.org/helpline, where we're supporting families who are having trouble with recovery from a concussion or post-concussion syndrome, or even, you know, for older folks who fear they may have CTE. But we're helping connect people with doctors and kind of understand what are those protocols and guidelines that they should be doing as they recover. And we're also connecting folks with mentors who have gone through the same thing. So something we're finding, especially with teenagers, is that, you know, the social isolation of recovering from a concussion or post-concussion syndrome can be really tough. You have to sit out from your sport. You can't go to school. You can't last that long in a classroom. You can't read so well because, you know, it hurts your brain. Those things can be really hard on somebody who's 14, 15, 16 years old. And so one of the great things about our helpline is we've started connecting those people who are going through it with other people who have already gone through it, so they can kind of bounce ideas and strategies off one another and make sure they understand, like, you know, hey, this is not the end of the world. It is going to get better. And here are some things that helped me. So that's a really important thing that we've been doing recently, especially for parents and teenagers who are in youth sports.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good word, especially for our audience that, you know, falls under the youth worker category, is to hear that kids that are going through this they can feel really isolated during this time, and and even isolated by perhaps their peers, like wondering, hey, are you really that hurt? Shouldn't, you know, you're not here out, you're not coming out for the team, you know, you're letting us down. So that, and so to be there to walk alongside our teens when they're dealing with these things and might feel isolated and might really be struggling in not just the athletic area of their life, but other areas too, because of the concussion, to walk alongside them is really important.
Yeah, that's a good point, Chris. As you're talking here, Tyler, I'm thinking to myself, back to my own high school days, which was a long time ago, but, you know, it's interesting. Sheila brought this up. You know, we never talked about concussions. You know, guys would quote unquote get their bell rung, and you were told, shake it off, get back in there. And it wasn't just coaches who were saying that. It was moms and dads from, you know, in the stands. And I think a big part of this is that we overlook this because you're not seeing blood. You're not seeing a bent appendage, you know, like an arm or a leg. You're not seeing a bone sticking out. It is something that, by and large, is not seen but needs to be understood. And so I think we need to be really sensitive to this. And this year in the NFL, it just seems to me, I don't know if it's just because we're more diligent about this or we're paying attention, but some of the hits, the targeting calls, even at the college level, we just seem to be so much more aware of this. And I think, too, there have been some pretty extreme cases in the NFL. You know, you think about the Steelers quarterback who got hit in the chin and just went down in a heap. You know, as you watch that, it does remind you just how dangerous this actually is. So, Sheila, I want to ask you, do you have any recommendations for parents as an athletic trainer? You know, a couple of, you know, quick, you know, bullet points that you would throw out at parents?
We tend to communicate to our parents on a regular basis. Once a kid is diagnosed with a concussion, I have a take-home sheet that I give parents or talk to them about it, and I go through the entire sheet. Just signs and symptoms to walk for that are more severe, that they should go to the emergency room. But that it's a serious, serious matter at the same time, even though it might be symptoms like a head cold. And I think that's where players, too, I can play if I'm sick or have bronchitis or whatever, but it's similar. It'll have some of the same symptoms, even dehydration, as that of a concussion. So kids will say, like, oh, I can play through this. I can play through this. I try to really hone in on all the athletes and the teammates and try to make a point to them as a teammate. If you see your friend, your teammate not acting right, you need to report that. And I am so thankful that there are kids that do report it. They don't want to be the one to, you know, rat a kid out. So I'll make sure I'm not like throwing them under the bus, but it does show that there are kids at a high school level, they are concerned about their friends.
Yeah. And so
even though, yeah.
Yeah. Ahead. What you're saying is you really need to build that culture where you instill in kids a sense of looking out for each other. And then in parents mm-hmm. as well, we are going to communicate well with you, and we really need your support to keep your kids safe. I think one of the things that is a takeaway for me from this is to think about the long term. You know, one of the trends we talk about here at CPYU when we're talking to parents and youth workers is that in today's world, I mean, kids have always been like this, I was like this, but it's even more so encouraged to live in the moment. And so we don't think a whole lot about the past and what we can learn from the history, and we don't think a lot about what tomorrow or a month or 10 or 20 or 30 years might bring. We live in the moment. And when I look at the work of the Concussion Legacy Foundation with this brain bank, you know, I'm now of an age where I'm watching these guys pass away who were guys I watched play these different sports, and they're a shadow of themselves. And it's not so much just the aging process, which we know, you know, does a number on us, but it's the aging process plus the fallout from the continued blows to the head. And that's where, you know, I would say to parents, you know, you've got to help your kids think ahead. You have to think ahead for them. You know, one of the things we say here is with the brain, frontal lobe, you know, last part of the human brain to get fully formed, 24, 25 years old, responsible for executive functioning, decision making, impulse control. And I often say to parents when I'm training them, you need to be the frontal lobe for your teenager. You need to make those decisions. So we would encourage parents with that as well. Tyler, I want to jump back to you just as we finish up. I know that the website you folks have is a great website. Could you just highlight some of the resources people can find there? I know I'm looking at it right now, and it just seems like there's a great number of things beyond just statistics and reports on what you're doing. There are some really helpful preventive tools as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to throw this one out there, we talked about the PSA we just put out. There's a lot more information about that in the study at tacklecanwait.com. But yeah, so our main website is concussionfoundation.org, and we have a lot of resources there. So you can certainly learn all you could ever want to learn about CTE and concussions and post-concussion syndrome. But we also have personal stories from people who have gone through it. We have strategies on, you know, returning from a concussion, what to do after a concussion, how to manage post-concussion syndrome, you know, what to ask your doctor when you're wondering what's going on in your brain. We have a concussion clinic search on the website where you can find a clinic near you that may be able to help with what you're going through. And then, like I said, this helpline that we just started this year has been really tremendous in terms of the feedback we're getting from people who are benefiting from it and learning, you know, how they can better respond to what they're going through, and, you know, learning some things about post-concussion syndrome or concussions that they may not have known, which is helping their recovery process. So whether it's just educating yourself or some sort of action items on recovering, we've got a lot at concussionfoundation.org.
From where you sit on the staff up there at CLF, are you folks seeing more of a sensitivity to your message and more of a spirit of cooperation to deal with this from some of the major, you know, the major leagues? I would say like the NFL or, you know, the soccer leagues at the higher levels. Are you finding, I mean, it seems to me like there seems to be more action being taken, but, you know, there's a lot that hangs in the balance for them. Are you seeing a softening from those folks towards this message?
Yeah, you know, I would say we're seeing more action out of them in terms of their protocols and their guidelines and how they are treating their athletes, which is very, very encouraging. You know, the NFL game is safer today than it's been in quite a while. So that's a really good thing. And I would say that applies generally across a lot of the pro sports. At the same time, you know, the NFL is still encouraging kids to play tackle football when they're really young. And so there's a little bit of a disconnect there where they're, you know, they're having their quarterbacks, like you said, suffer extremely serious brain injuries on the field, and they're treating them the right way, but then they're, you know, they're also recruiting kids to play when they're really young and be at risk for the same type of injuries, where they don't have a paycheck or the medical personnel to help them in the same way. So we're really still trying to push that youth message. But certainly the higher level of leagues have, you know, have improved in terms of practice protocols and guidelines in the games, and are doing a better job in terms of their response to concussions.
Yeah. Is there anything you folks are working on that's not secretive that you can tell us about that's coming down the road? Maybe things that would be helpful to practitioners like Sheila as an athletic trainer, or to parents, you know, resources for parents. Is there anything we can look forward to?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one program that certainly applies to Sheila's work, and you guys were actually kind of alluding to it earlier without even naming it, which is our Team Up Speak Up program. So it's not a new one. I've unveiling new partners all the time, but this program teaches young athletes to look out for each other when it comes to concussions. So exactly what you guys were talking about before, it can sometimes be difficult to take care of yourself when you have a brain injury, and it's tough to speak up and get yourself off the field. And so we want to rely on teammates to look out for each other, just like we do with bullying. You know, it's the bystander education. And so we're asking teammates to speak up when they see a teammate with a concussion. And so that's something that we're asking all parents and coaches and athletes to bring to their own communities. It's a major national program of ours. We have USA Hockey Team Up Speak Up Week coming up next week, where we have a bunch of programs participating and really kind of shouting this message that teammates have a responsibility to look out for each other when it comes to concussions, and that's going to make us all safer because we're going to spot more of them.
That's good. See, Sheila, you're on the cutting edge there with your work with getting the teammates to talk to each other. So, yeah, cool. That's good. So this has been a great, great conversation. I want to remind our listeners that everything that's been mentioned here today and anything else we discover that will be helpful to the conversation in terms of resources and follow-up, we will post on the homepage, cpyu.org, for this particular episode of Youth Culture Matters. Just scroll down underneath the player. There will be links to everything, including the Concussion Legacy Foundation, which you'll find at concussionfoundation.org. Tyler, off the top of your head, that phone number that you were alluding to, do you know what that is? We can include that.
The helpline?
Yeah, the helpline. That's it.
Yeah, so that's an online submission. So you just go to concussionfoundation.org/helpline.
Okay. All right, great. And that's, I think folks can navigate that as well if they just go to your website. So excellent. Yeah. Sheila, thank you.
Yeah.
I guess I'll see you maybe this weekend at some point. I don't know. We'll get to see our grandkids. This is great having a family member on here. And I want you to be sure to tell that husband of yours to listen to this because, you know, he begged to play football when he was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. And I was telling Chris here today, we didn't let him until he was in 8th grade. And it wasn't necessarily because of this. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily because of this. It was some of the coaching that I saw on the sidelines. And I don't think that would have helped with this issue either. So, and I think he realizes that because he's gone on to coach as well. But so thank you, Sheila. Tyler, so great to have you on here. And I really want to continue this dialogue with you. We'll tap in again again, there's another wrestling, right? Tap in, tap out. But we'll tap in with you. We'll tap in with you at some point in the future as things develop up there. It's just awesome to hear what you're doing. And we really want to encourage you in your work. It is valuable and necessary. So thank you to everybody up there. So for everybody who's listening, thanks, Tyler. For everybody who's listening, thanks for tuning in and spread the word about this. You know, share it with friends, like it, give us a good review wherever you listen to your podcasts, and we will talk to you next time on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.